So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
And Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today, it's iPhone, and a lot of
and
other
some
news.
Other phones.
We got our Pixel 5 review. We have our Pixel 4a 5G and a preview of the Xbox Series X. We'll be talking about all that today on the show. And also, Jess Condit from Engadget is going to be joining us to talk about Xbox and her thoughts on that. She's been living with it for a while, so that should be fun. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to the Engadget Podcast on iTunes or your podcatcher's choice. Leave us a review on iTunes, and you can join us live at 10 a.m. on Thursdays, typically Eastern. And the benefit of that is you get to see us actually work here, but you can also join in and chat with us about all of our segments. So, like, for example, today we'll be able to chat with people and take their questions about the Xbox Series X. Let's jump into all the iPhones, the iPhone 12, the iPhone 12 mini, and the Pro and Max version of each phone, and a couple other things from Apple. It was a pretty streamlined hardware event from Apple. There weren't really many surprises, right? We got the HomePod mini, which is a smaller smart speaker, kind of what we were expecting. We got the iPhone 12, and the entire iPhone lineup has 5G. The only surprise there seems like the mini, I think, because there were rumors of a smaller one coming. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting to see Apple focusing on like a actual premium small phone. And I wonder if that's like worth a deeper conversation from us. We've got 5G. We got a couple cool features. Sherlyn, what really stands out from you? And actually, before we even get to that, I want to say, if you guys want to hear us dive into like every little bit of this, the iPhone presentation, we did a live chat right after that on Tuesday. So you can find that on YouTube. It's a fun watch because we dive into all the little bits of info. This is going to be like a broader discussion. But Sherlyn, what's your takeaway from the iPhone event?
I mean, I was super stoked for the mini. I think as someone who's been redabbling with iOS again, that event was... And as someone who like is an Android ecosystem person, that was very... Like, I had severe grass is greener syndrome. I was like, oh, that looks so nice.
It does look nice and polished, and it's not cracking all the time. Mm.
Well, the iPhone 12 Pro build looks nice, right? That has the shiny edges, the, you know, Pro's camera setup. So that really like seemed more... The sensor shift really stood out to me, I think. Then the 12 mini just was like a cute little iPhone. The way it fit in the hands that they showed looked really good. So I might consider getting an iPhone 12 mini.
Okay, I'm holding that you to that. I feel like the big thing this year design-wise is that they just went back to the flat edge design, which we last saw in the iPhone 5 and the 5S, which to me felt like the pinnacle of older iPhone cases, because the iPhone 5 was just such a thin, light, sleek thing, and that flat case just felt really good in your hand. Mm-hmm. This time, they're going back to those flat edges, basically for the antennas. And these 5G phones need big, big, big antennas. So that pretty much the entire outside is an antenna array. There's even like a little dot, like a little spot underneath the power button that is like an open antenna area.
It looks like
a
SIM tray, but it's basically on the edge below the power button. And it is sort of like a receiver thingy.
Which makes me wonder, I hope they learned a lot from their antenna gate stuff, because everyone's saying that like as you're holding it, we've had this problem before. It's going to be even more pronounced on 5G, where antennas are so sensitive and so like it's so like finicky. So there's that. But I appreciate this new design. I think the iPhone 12, just as a, you know, the phone that most people will probably get, it looks like a really good device because it's they all have OLED screens now. It's,
Finally, OLEDs.
Finally. You know, they're still sticking with, what, two cameras. They're not really pushing things. The processor looks good, but it seems like just overall they're kind of refining things here. It's really 5G and a couple of the other things they added, too, that I think are going to be a big draw for a lot of users. And one of those is MagSafe, which bringing back.
Wow. I forgot about MagSafe. When you asked me what stood out, I forgot about MagSafe for a moment, but it stood out. I was just like, oh, this is really cool. Like, I don't
it's
use
really
a lot of,
cool.
It's I don't use it's, a lot of accessories, but
it's nothing high might, tech. It's just it's a freaking
it's just
magnet.
Magnets. I know it's that's a what Twitter magnet. That was the Twitter take, and it's true. But like the funny thing is what they've done with it, right? It seems like they're and also Apple just has a much more thriving and like case and accessory ecosystem than any other Android phone, just because there's it's just more unified. There's so much more of them in volume for the one brand. And yeah, I'm excited to see like what people make out of this,
because it's honestly it's more of them than just magnets. I feel like this is the thing where you talk about Apple usability, where they look at something that's existed before and kind of just make it slightly easier to use. I feel like Apple Pay was one of those, because we had NFC payments before. They kind of sucked, and they needed a unified way to kind of bring it all together and make it easy for people. This is just like, hey, it's a magnet, but it's also a smart way to align your phone with wireless chargers, which is a pain.
A lot of people have pointed out, too, that the because it's magnetic and it's so much smaller, and you don't have to leave it lying on the table when you're charging your phone, you can actually hold up your phone and use it while you're charging, too, which is a nice change.
Oh, yeah. That's been a constant problem for us with wireless power. And the other thing, we didn't, the AirPower is dead, the three device wireless charging thing. That's not happening, but they did show off this cool accessory. It's sad. They showed off a portable accessory that could wirelessly charge your iPhone and your Apple Watch, and it kind of folds up together too for traveling, which to me, that just back when we were traveling again, I am certainly tired of like having a ton of cables in my bag. The Apple Watch cable is always too long. Do you have anything to say about 5G, Sherlyn? Because I feel like that's a big thing Apple's pushing this year, but I think we both know, and we've talked about this on the show, it's not great in the US. It's not going to be great for a while, right?
You know what's a funny story I can tell you right now about
yes.
that? Is my my therapist asked me if it's it's worth getting a 5G phone this year.
Did your therapist ask you, this is 5G? Is it true?
Because like I started opening up more about like what I do at work, like over the last few months.
And they don't Google you, I assume. Yeah,
they don't Google you. So now they know. Like I gave him a heads up where I was like, oh yeah, next week's gonna be the Apple event. I'm gonna be covering it. And then he like uses an iPhone as well. So he was all like,
give me the insider info.
Right at the start of our session, he was like, I know you hate. I don't want to talk to you about your work, but I kind of want to ask you about 5G.
And like, no, so this is all the pain in my life, all the pressure in my life. And that's funny.
I found it so funny. But I think of like people like my therapist and my friends as people who are really asking that question, right? People who really need to know whether this is the year to get 5G. After talking to my therapist, his main takeaway, because he's on an iPhone 11, he was all like, I can wait for the 13. I don't need to upgrade for 5G right now. And I think that that's what most people who are on a newer iPhone model should be feeling and should be thinking. Unless you have like one of the older ones, or you really want the iPhone 12 mini, I don't think that the 5G is such a big deal on the 12 series just yet, especially because the antenna placement is something they need to figure out over time. So the 13 is likely going to be better.
Gotcha. And the iPhone 12 mini, let's talk a bit about that, because it's a it's a notable thing. It's a unique thing. It has a 5.4-inch screen. Apple sold it as an iPhone that fits in the palm of your hand, which imagine that, a phone that actually fits in your hand.
Yeah.
Kind of,
you can
kind
reach
of amazing.
Yeah. Across the screen with your thumb for some of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's a unique thing, because it's like it's been a while since we've seen good small phones. It's been like the iPhone SE, which they refreshed this year and looks really cool. This thing is even smaller than the iPhone SE. It's a smaller physical device, but it has a larger screen because it has the newer edge-to-edge screen design. So I think for a lot of people, for people like my wife, who I've been trying to get over to an iPhone for a while, and she just doesn't like big phones. Right now, she has a Pixel 3, which is just 0.1 inches bigger than this. So this is going to be an easy transition. Thoughts on the cute, small phone, Sherlyn?
I mean, it is the one I'm going to get. I prefer the smaller phones. I've always thought, I was looking at the sizes for the 12 Pro and 12 Pro Max, and those are just too big for me. I also, like your wife, have been maining a smaller Pixel, and those are about the same size, I think. So we'll see, though. I mean, like, the nice thing, too, is that, like, compared to the SE, which uses older processors, the 12 Mini uses this new 5-nanometer processor, which is great. I can't wait to see what
processor
that brings.
It has 5G. It is the smallest 5G phone we've ever seen, too, which is notable.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, you're right, because, well, the Pixel 5 is fairly small, but definitely the 12 mini looks like it's smaller than this, yeah. So, no, I'd love to see. I want to test. For me, to get the iPhone 12 mini, I would need to know the cameras are great, the battery life is good. I think that's about it.
Battery life is the one area, because battery life scales with the size of your phone, and that's always been one big benefit of the bigger phones.
Exactly.
You do kind of trade off some battery life for having a bigger screen, but you also get more room to fit in a battery. I wonder what they're going to do with that. And I'm looking forward to seeing like what those specs are.
Yeah, and they're OLEDs too. So it's like, okay.
They're OLEDs. And the iPhone 12 seems fine for what it is. What's interesting is that the iPhone 12 mini starts at $699, which is where the iPhone 11 started. So now the iPhone 12 is starting at $799. So it seems like a way to really push people up a little higher in the price range. Let's talk about the 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Max, because like last year, they're slightly, you know, higher end, more premium versions of these phones. They have stainless steel finishes. They have three cameras still, unfortunately, which is it's a shame, because we're seeing a lot more cameras on Android phones. But I feel like this is one respect where Apple is being a little restrained and not going like balls to the wall like Samsung and other folks.
It's arguable how useful those four cameras are too. I not to defend Apple. I never want to defend Apple, but
wow, we're seeing the transition here from Android
knowing the experience and the assorted failures that Android has had, I don't think four cameras is all that necessary, because the fourth is the telephoto, the extra zoom telephoto in this case, because or a macro, right? Like I don't think most people really need a macro on their camera, like a macro, on their phone.
But yeah, macro seems like the thing that is usually overkill for a lot of these phones. Telephoto makes sense, and telephoto is the thing you get. On iPhone 12, what do you get? You get the wide and the telephoto
and the main. So,
but you get ultra wide on Pro, which is useful.
I like ultra wide.
I like ultra wide lenses. So if you're like in a small room or something, or you just want to get like a really skewed shot, ultra wide is a really cool way to get that. And honestly, being trapped in a house with a baby where we're often in a room and I want to capture a photo and capture everything in the room, sometimes that's the way you have to do it. So, you know, those are the benefits there. The iPhone 12 Pros can shoot and edit Dolby Vision HDR, which is notable. I don't know how many people are going to do that, because normally professional cameras plus computers to render that HDR. So, hey, okay, this is cool.
And this brings us back to a point I think that was made a lot in the 24 to 48 hours after the event, which is that the Pro might be a bit too pro. it might not have the same appeal. And the point I was trying to make also with the three camera versus four camera setup too, is that Apple traditionally, the iPhones are made for the norms, right? Like the people who, the more mainstream audience. So it's really pushing the Pro line with these camera upgrades into maybe beyond the mainstream. Maybe like regular people should just keep to the 12 and not consider the 12 Pro.
I think that's why they created this whole new line to begin with, right? Because when they debuted the iPhone 10, so the iPhone X, there was never an iPhone 9, right? So we got the iPhone 10, which was the new redesign, and then the 8 series, which were the old designs with the chunky bezels, and those were all the same year. So that was like the delineation. Do you want to try this new thing, or do you prefer the home button? And then eventually they pushed it all to the iPhone 10 design. But the iPhone 10s year just seemed boring. It just seemed super boring. Like, we got the 10s Max, we got slightly bigger, but that was kind of it. There wasn't really much going on there. Last year's phones is where they really solidified how those things were being different. But yeah, thoughts?
I mean, there was the 10R the same year as the 10S, I think. 10R, and that was, there's a similar delineation where there's that slightly, you know, budgetier line, and then there's the, you know, higher end line. But this is
the
10R
had a bigger screen than the 10S.
Yeah, which is weird. And it was using this liquid retina, which was LCD. Anyway, you know, this shift to the 12 and 12 Pro is a bit different, where the lower end, so-called lower end phones, actually good enough for most people, rather than like the 10R, which was more like the budget light option. And then you have pushing towards higher end specs. I almost think this is Apple's way of getting like the Android people interested, because Android people have always been like, we're at the forefront of cutting edge technology with these pop-up cameras and four cameras.
We will never see Apple make a voice like that for my camera. Talk about Android ideas that Apple won't steal.
They will never do
a pop-up camera. Wow.
Never.
Or a flash
never,
or ever. Whatever.
Or like, yeah. Good luck if you want to see an in-display fingerprint sensor even. Like, I feel like at some point maybe, but that...
We could see that. That doesn't feel... Yeah. That feels...
That might be a steal. Yeah.
What feels Apple-y is sleek and easy to use, and everything about the pop-up cameras or the, like, twisting phones...
Feels
what was
like
the
they
LG
would never...
thing we saw? No. Yeah. We're not going to get any of that again.
You mean the LG Wing?
The LG Wing, yeah. Talk about the Pro line. So it seems like Apple settled to a point where they have the budget phone. They have the refreshed iPhone SE. Mm-hmm. They have the mainstream phone. They have iPhone 12. And they have a smaller mainstream phone, which is interesting. I don't know who the Pro and Pro Max are really for now. I will say, for me, as a guy who is chasing a toddler around and wants the best cameras possible, I will always go Pro, but I'm a nerd. I'm a gadget hound, you know?
You might be disappointed, like, because if we're talking about, like, that whole thing where the Pro is for the very advanced, like, user who really wants all these high specs or high-end specs, this major feature that's missing that Apple will be slow to adopt, I think, is 120 hertz refresh rate.
Yeah. Or even 90. A higher refresh rate.
Even 90. Exactly. Exactly.
Would be nice.
But then I feel like Apple's always been behind on display tech, right? It's always been slow to kind of like
adopt
some things.
They were slow to OLED.
Things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And HDR was even not supported until recently, and Sony actually started that. So.
But I think they got Dolby Vision before anybody else did. So that was the thing. Like, sometimes Apple takes a while, but then they make a leap ahead of other people. So it's a really interesting game that Apple plays of like waiting, jumping.
They jumped because they were also, I think, maybe they were in talks with Dolby to, like, get the standard together. Because HDR standards were just all over the place back then, too. So Dolby Vision's now becoming the most popular, I think, also because Apple threw his name behind it. So
That's a long story. But the thing is, Dolby Vision used to require hardware, like, in a device to activate. And that's not the case anymore. Now Dolby Vision can just be software. If your if your display meets certain specs, it can be Dolby Vision approved, but you still have to pay for it. You have to pay a license fee to Dolby.
To use the certification,
I think Apple is at least one of those companies that's willing to do that and get that branding rather than like, you know, Samsung and a lot of other folks.
Right, or like HDR 10 or whichever else HDR standards were out there. But I don't know, people, I was kind of impressed by the footage and the samples they showed at the event. I was just like, oh, really? iPhone cameras are that great now? And I know they've made a lot of improvement over the last year or two. I'm still a Pixel camera person at heart, which we'll get to later.
Good. I mean, Google's done a lot with one camera, but yeah, we will talk about the Pixel 5 and kind of what's going on there, where I'm not impressed. I do think like all the videos Apple always shows off during these events are super, super marketing things. But they showed off a bunch of like videos that were shot right on the iPhone 12 Pro. And I think the dynamic range of those sensors, just the ability of information they were capture in low light. It's a lot of different things. They're good cameras that do a good job. And I'll say this, as somebody who has trouble sometimes with cameras that can't quite capture my dark skin, it looks like this camera will actually be good with that too. And I feel like that's the thing you can't quite sell because a lot of people don't understand it. But I think the overall low light performance on this phone seems kind of phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's a big plus.
I can't wait to see what our tests of the phone result in, if it's really that great, but we'll see.
Things we were waiting for too, like rumors that we were wondering about. So there is no, we did not make the shift to USB-C this year.
Yeah.
A lot of people assumed we would.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we lost the cable in the box or something.
No,
right?
We have the cable in the box.
It's
the good cable. It is the USB-C to Lightning cable, which you previously had to go pay extra for. Actually, the last time I bought one of those, I was in Taiwan for Computex and I was like, oh, damn. Somehow I left the hotel without my cable. Right. So I went to a random Apple reseller, pointed really hard at the cable I wanted.
And, I didn't go with you to help you like translate or anything?
No, you were not there. But it's fine. Everybody, the thing I love about Taiwan and our Computex trips is that English, it's okay. Yeah. Like people get it. So yeah, that is the good cable, but you need a good charger. And
you need
the AC adapter.
The AC adapter, but with the C socket, right? Like, yeah. So a lot of people don't have that. I mean, my parents were like, my dad was all like, I can't plug this into my computer. And he's like on the desktop running Windows XP. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like,
that's true. Dad. That's true. So yeah, USB-C, not everywhere in computers. I think the assumption is, and some Android manufacturers are doing this, is that you could plug it into any of the AC adapters you have or your computer. But if you don't have C yet, that's kind of a pain.
Yeah.
I will say Anker and a lot of companies are producing really nice, inexpensive, powerful AC adapters for USB-C. Mm-hmm. So you can find those pretty much everywhere. And the other thing, there is no headphones. There aren't headphones in the box, which Apple took great pains to explain as a like environmental thing, right?
Yeah, I get it. This is a conversation that I hear both sides on. Like, I see why we want to reduce e-waste. A lot of people don't need that component anymore, but not, I think, when you're shifting, where the cable included in the box is so different from previous. I think that that's not the time yet to like remove these bricks, but I also understand that not everyone, you know, like is like me, and I have a lot of accessories. You know,
I have a lot of random headphones too. But here's the thing: the headphones in the box, even though they were like the reshaped EarPods, that was the name, right? They still sounded kind of crappy. If you went to a drugstore and spent $10 on like a good pair of headphones, any headphones, they would probably sound better than the AirPods. It's going to be annoying for a lot of people, especially if they're not in the news and they're not seeing what's happening, especially if you gift an iPhone to somebody and it doesn't have all the components they need. You kind of have to be more aware as a shopper. That stinks. Apple will be happy to sell you replacement accessories, but it's not great overall. I do think the environmental impact, that is a thing I've been thinking about, because we talk about devices so much. All the gadgets we discuss and the things we tell people that, hey, you should probably buy this, have a huge environmental cost. And even the small things in the packaging, like the headphones you may never use, have a cost. So it is probably, this is where we have to go, because we've turned this world into living hell. So we have to kind of scale back somehow. So that makes sense to me. One other thing is that they have not shifted at all from the iPhone X design. And that's specifically the notch design on the front screen. And I'm used to it, but I am certainly, that's the thing, when I look at an Android phone, any Android phone with a pinhole camera, I just see all display on the front.
Yeah.
That just feels like, man, what am I missing? It's just a couple pixels. It's not very much, but it does feel like you're missing something. I think on the iPhone 12 mini, it is not proportional. So it's actually, it looks like it takes an even bigger chunk of the screen than it does on the 12 and others, right?
Yeah, it does look like that. And as someone who, again, has been Android for a while and having seen this feature on Android phones for a while, I can tell you, like, it's nice, because Android also has now, by now, figured out how to avoid the cutout in the hole with the notifications. Yep. Before, when it was first introduced, it was like, whoops, you can't see one icon.
Now it's like freaking magic. Now it's like there is a camera in the front and no actual spot for it.
Exactly. So this is one way, like, I mean, we've pointed out so many ways that Apple tends to lag the competition. And now, like, yes, it is iterating or improving on certain things ahead of Android, but definitely there's still a lot of catch up Apple has to do.
Gotcha. And one more device before we give up on Apple, the HomePod Mini. Like, let's, last but not least, but probably least, is the HomePod Mini, which is the new $99 small, you know, smaller version of the HomePod. It looks fine. It looks fine. Like I described it, it looks like a sliced open grapefruit that you'd get, you know, for breakfast somewhere.
$99, though. That's a really good price. I mean, for an Apple product, like, the HomePod was a lot more expensive than that. $99 makes it a lot more competitive with the Nest Audio that we just reviewed, and the Amazon Echo. It seems like now, instead of putting this extreme focus on sound quality like the original HomePod, Apple is like, oh, we need to make a speaker that's smart.
This is affordable.
A Siri speaker. So this is a way for Apple smart home ecosystem people to get a smart speaker, because otherwise you're going to just use Amazon stuff.
This is one you could put in your kids' rooms or something, and they don't have the stuff, like, there's no Alexa always listening, although there is Siri back and forth, but that's usually local on the device. I'll say, like, I've seen some speaker comparisons. I believe this thing has only a single driver, which really puts it behind the Amazon Echo or the,
or even Nest Audio. The Nest Audio is impressive.
The Nest Audio sounds all right. This isn't going to be a great sounding device, but I think it's a good way to spread things around. They introduced an intercom feature, which Google has, Amazon has. One cool thing is you'll be able to drop into your kids' AirPods.
I like that. Yeah, that was so funny.
That is funny. Teenagers everywhere will hate it. Parents everywhere will be like, this is exactly what I need.
Here's our distinction, Dev. You're the parent on this conversation. Yep. I'm the one who remembers being a teenager. Not that you don't, but I remember being this rebellious teen.
It was 5 years ago,
teen.
But yeah, for you. Yeah.
Yes, I wish. I would put on my headphones just to drown out my parents yelling at me.
And now they could be like, hey, we bought you these headphones so we can jump in whenever we want.
I'd be like,
You would be that to your parents. I believe you, Charlene. Sure.
I might not be. I don't know. But it's a funny feature to see.
Yeah. So do you think this is going to be the last Apple news we see this year? Because there were still some things people were expecting, right? Like maybe some of the new MacBook news. We haven't heard about any new Apple TV things, which seems like now seems like a good point for it. Is there going to be another event, you think?
The rumors and the expectation is that there will be an event in November. The people who have been watching the industry more or less know. Usually, I think in the past, they've held like a Chicago event for education stuff around November, but I can't really remember.
But that was typically like cheap iPads, and we've already had the iPad news. Yeah.
So this will probably be before MacBook.
One rumor I saw too was like the Apple TV is going to get like the ultra wideband chip. And a lot of the devices are going to get this ultra wideband functionality, which will allow, it's sort of like localized GPS in that they will work directly with your iOS devices. They could tell like when you come home or something.
Yeah, basically it's similar to the millimeter wave 5G technology, because it's so like high on the spectrum and short frequency and like the propagation is shorter. It's really meant for these contained spaces, but it's so like the throughput is so good, the latency is so much better just within that space. I'm really excited to see like once all these devices have it integrated, how it'll work out.
It's interesting. Like if you had HomePods and you walk from room to room, if your audio would just like follow you from room to room, that would be kind of cool without manually doing it. This is all speculation.
That is the dream.
This is what ultra wideband could allow for.
And that's something that I know Google has been working on, this idea of multi-room audio and your music following you from room to room. And this could be that seamless implementation we're thinking about. Yeah.
Or even like video content too. So anyway, that's all the stuff we're expecting. Let us know what you guys think about all the Apple news. Will you be upgrading? I'm having a hard time thinking if I should upgrade from the 11 Pro just because it's not good enough yet, but I really do want to get my wife the 12 mini. So
I also want you, dear listener and viewer, to let us know where you stand on this e-waste debate. I want to hear from people out there, not us reviewers, whether you need that thing in the box. Yeah.
Yes. podcast@engadget.com. Drop us a line. Let's move on to our Pixel 5 reviews, and also not just Pixel 5, the Pixel 4a 5G, two Pixel devices we just reviewed this week. Thoughts, Sherlyn, broad thoughts? Because I know you didn't do the Pixel 5, right?
Well, I have both phones, and in my review, I compared the 4a 5G to the 5 a lot, too, because my overall thoughts is that the Pixel lineup this year is hella confusing.
Yeah.
It's like... Yeah. It's like, first of all, like, Google, what were you doing, bro? Like, And then secondly, like, which Pixel to get is also a big question. So I'm sure you are too. I advise like my friends in the real world what phones they should get. And I've been trying to convince people to go on the Pixel, like to get on the Pixel bandwagon.
Apple just like, or Google just like threw a wrench into all your recommendations now.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, entirely possible. Because one of my friends, she's an artist and she recently gave up on the Samsung Note series that she's been using for a long time. And she's like, should I really make that switch to Apple? Because she just bought an iPad. I'm like, it might be better for you, but hold on for the Pixel 5. And now the Pixel 5 is here, and I'm like, oh, no.
Now go iPhone. Especially, I will say, like, so much of our devices are defined by our ecosystems, and your life is much easier if you have devices that play well together. So that is the Apple trap, but that's also partially the Android trap and the Samsung trap. So that's also one reason I want to get my wife away from Android, because it's so much easier if we're all on iOS. Yeah.
It's true. Like, if you're in, like, you're not just taking care of yourself, you want to play nice with other people, mm-hmm. you have to make sure you're all in the same ecosystem, because, like, for you, AirDrop will be so much easier to use with your wife rather than mm-hmm. whatever the hell you're using now. For me, I've got Google's new nearby share feature I can use with a bunch of phones, but Android's a little fragmented.
A bunch of phones, but you don't know which ones.
Yeah,
you
not
don't
all know how of them.
Android.
Just okay. I'll get on Pixels. Just Pixels. Anyhow, so we did these. We cranked out these reviews. Me and Chris Velasco, our senior editor for mobile, and I think both of us feel largely the same way. I have a lot of fun review stories to tell you about, though. I mean,
So does it involve trying to fall? Because I think those are the only stories you want to hear about.
Not this time. Not this time. Basically, I needed to test like some of the new features, and you know, thankfully this time no 5G testing for me. Just I didn't have to, you know, pace up and down a block to get 5G. But one thing that kept happening when I was trying to test new features was I kept grabbing the wrong phone. It's like, so I have the 4A that I'm using as my daily driver now, and then the 4A 5G. And honestly, one of the differences is that the size, the 4A 5G is slightly bigger, is a 6.2-inch screen compared to the 4A, which is like a 5.8-inch. But the difference isn't that big when you put them side by side. And when I'm holding just the 4A 5G, I'm always like, is this the small guy or the bigger guy? And you kind of always had to flip behind to be like, oh, there's a double camera. And I just was testing features and I was like, wait, why doesn't this phone have them? And it turns out I was using the 4A, not the 5G. So that's one thing, right? Like just based on their faces and holding them on their own, they're hard to differentiate. The other thing was
Not many people will have that problem, but that is a very Sherlin specific problem. I think it does speak to like the lack of design differentiation among all these devices.
Which could be a good thing, right? Like it's not a bad thing. The thing about like lack of differentiation, especially between the 4A 5G and the 5, is that it makes it hard to be like, well, which one do I get? Because the difference between the two, the major feature that's missing to me anyway on the 4A 5G is water resistance. Like when I recommend people what not to get or what to get in the Pixel lineup this year, I'm just how clumsy are you?
And here's the joke we make about 5G is that for a lot of, does it have the millimeter wave stuff? Because you need to be outside to get some of these super fast 5G speeds, maybe outside in the rain. That's not great.
I used the 4A 5G in the rain a little bit because it was drizzling during our review video shoot, but it was fine. It's just you can't like drop it in the pool or something. The thing you were saying about millimeter wave, that's the other problem with the 4A 5G is that it starts at $499, but if you want millimeter wave, you need to spend $100 more to get Verizon's millimeter wave model.
Which is faster than the,
faster than the sub-6.
Yeah.
And it's the one that you want to get for that speed boost, but it's not widely available yet. The nodes aren't all up all over the place. And what I think is problematic, because we were also talking about Apple earlier today, is that Verizon made this model that's $100. Like Verizon has this, and Verizon, by the way, is our parent company, but they have no control over editorial content. Verizon and Google have this like specific carrier version for their millimeter wave 5G. And then like at the Apple event, Verizon was just like, hey, we're launching nationwide sub-6. So you don't actually need to spend an extra $100 for the Pixel. But we don't care about you Pixel people.
You kind of do. Because nationwide sub-6 is not going to be, it's not going to be a huge speed boost. Like, they're just building on top of LTE at this point.
But Verizon customers who wanted a Pixel 4A 5G, which I admit is a very small set of, maybe a small set of people, just got pretty screwed, I think.
Everybody benefits from more, from a wider network, right? Because
I agree, but you can't use the base 4A 5G on Verizon, it doesn't seem like, right? It,
on Verizon Sub 6, but not Verizon millimeter wave.
But you still have to pay $100 extra to buy the Verizon version, which has both Sub 6 and millimeter wave.
Yeah.
So this is something we're going to figure out. I already sent a question out to Google and Verizon being like, well, what happens now to this $100 more expensive version? We'll figure that out.
We didn't talk about this in the iPhone thing, by the way, but there were reports too that some carriers like T-Mobile and Sprint have to charge slightly more for the iPhones, I think, based on the 5G stuff.
It's not that they are charging more. It's that the AT&T and Verizon models come with carrier discounts. So they're actually $100 to $200 cheaper. And no idea why T-Mobile didn't want to go along with it, because maybe they were not happy that Verizon was on stage at the Apple event.
Yeah, that could be it. So we have two. What is up? Like, general thoughts of the Pixel 5, because the review, you know, Chris's review felt very lukewarm. I don't know if it's like the mid-range processor, if it's just like other things. Like, it doesn't seem like a leap over the 4, and in some ways seems like a step back, right?
In some ways, I think if you're a processor, you know, nerd, I guess is the word for it, you would be disappointed to know that they're using a Snapdragon 765G in the Pixel 5.
A 7 series,
what? As compared to the 865 855 that was on the 4. But as has been proven in the A series, Google's really good at making software fly on like not so great or not so fast processors. So it might be okay. Like, don't get too mad just yet, because you're saving $200 at least, right, on the Pixel 5 compared to other flagships. Mm-hmm. But I do think that because V and I basically wrote our reviews together, and his general takeaway is that for the money, there's just so many better options.
Yeah.
OnePlus, I think, came in this week with the strongest competition to the Pixel 5. For $750, the OnePlus 8T offers a really compelling set of features, right? Setting aside the cameras, which is where OnePlus just is not good at and Google's really good at, the OnePlus 8T has like the high-end processor of super fast refresh rate. I think it's 120 hertz. It's got a nice design and clean-ish Oxygen OS software. So, and it's $750, you don't really, and a bigger battery too, by the way. So there,
what's the Pixel 5 start at?
$799. Yeah, $700. Okay. So a $50 jump for a way better processor. I think if you're someone who cares about the spec sheet, like, I want these numbers, I want this processor model, the OnePlus 8T might be the better
buy. I would not make that jump. I will say, like, the things you actually see, like the photos you take, I think the camera differences, you'll probably than the processor.
I was going to say that, like, if you care about camera, on the other hand, and if you're a more mainstream user of your phone, then the Pixel 5 is good enough. It's a little expensive for what it is, but, you know, I mean, it's already cheaper than a Samsung Galaxy S20. I'd like to point out that the battery, like, there's two things that made me laugh during this review, laugh at myself. One, the battery test we run is a video rundown test. I usually, when I do like a review battery test, I leave it overnight. I'm like, give it 15 hours to, you know, I should be fine. It should be dead. I start my test at like 7 p.m. The next morning at like noon, I'm like heading out to go to our review shoot. I'm like, all right, it should be dead now. I thought it was dead already. I look over at the phone and it's still going. And I'm like, okay, maybe a few minutes more. So I check. Google's like, this phone should be running for another like 10 hours. I'm just like, what the hell? I can't do this.
They probably have some like crazy battery saving thing. Were you looping a video, or were you doing like a test?
I was looping a video. That's our test. And we asked Google afterwards, and it turns out they do optimize for video playback. So that's why it sucks juice so much slower.
It's weird. So when we test laptops, we turn that stuff off, like some of the special battery saving stuff, it does. It's weird. It's unfair in the way it treats video.
Yeah, I agree with you. We definitely, you and I, when we test laptops, we turn off power saver. We turn off at the brightness dip after 20% thing. These things I also turn off on the phone when we're running a test. But this stuff that Google's talking about, that it's optimized for video playback, it's in the background. It's definitely not something that the user has access to blocking. So, I mean, like, if you play a lot of video on your phone, you're going to see much more battery life out of the Pixel 5 and 4A 5G. The other new feature, one of the things that Google's really good at, you know, and it differentiates their phones from others, whether it's Android or Apple, is software. And, you know, when Google did call screening as a feature back on the Pixel 3, I was like, oh crap, this is really good. Now with the Pixel 5 and the 4a 5g, you get this feature called Hold For Me. Hold For Me is like assistant, you know, when you're calling a helpline or a hotline, assistant like steps in and you can tap it and assistant will be online for you, and then you can like walk away and come back later when it's ready. And basically what assistant or Google software is doing is listening to the music on the on the line, and then when it hears someone's voice come on, it'll be smart enough to differentiate from your call is important to us and hello, my name is someone, I'm here to help you, how may I help you, that sort of thing. Like, it'll differentiate between those two things and alert you when it's your turn to talk. So I decided to like use the Verizon Fios helpline because it's like an easy number. And but I mean, Google did set up, by the way, like a fake hotline for you to call and test if you wanted to. But who's going to use Google's optimized hotline to test? So I called Verizon Internet and I was like, okay, they put me on hold for, by the way, an hour. I was like, crap. Yeah.
That's how you know.
Hour, yeah. This is like a, I called it peak hour. So then my phone rang, and then on the screen it was like, someone's ready for you. And I talked to, I was like, oh no, what do I ask them? I didn't prepare a question. So I was like, so I heard about this thing called 5G, and can you tell me how to get it on my home internet? And this poor telephone, like this poor customer service agent was like, ma'am, you can't get 5G in your home. I was like, but I heard that you can get 5G on DSL.
Oh, you just kept going. You just kept going. Like the worst sketch skit, like the worst improv skit. Wow.
Yeah, but my favorite was when they were like, ma'am, let me tell you all about 5G. And I was like, I know.
Did they go into 5G? the Rona thing? It's like, you don't want 5G. 5G is going to give you the Rona.
No. This person, my customer service agent, was very nice, very kindly explained to me that, like, ma'am, 5G is for cell phones, so you need to call the cell service people to talk about getting
it. Although that's like, not necessarily true, because a lot of,
I know,
including Verizon, a lot of folks are positioning 5G as, like, home internet replacement eventually.
That's what I was trying to get at, but not very eloquently. So anyway, I that call, and then I was just like, so how was that experience for you too? It was just like really weird, where like I also had to like turn the question back to the service rep, where I was like, did you hear anything at the start of this call that like told you I was using a special service? It just was like a funny experience overall. I was like, I enjoyed getting a lesson from in 5G from someone who may not know as much as me. I don't know. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But that was hilarious.
Can we let's wrap this up a little, just because I have a burning question. Yes. Which is the better phone, you think? The Pixel 5 or the 4a 5G? Because they're both the 5G phones. They're both like, they're so competitive, and there is a price difference. I feel like that's the thing.
If you go, if you look at just judge based on our review scores, the 4a 5G is the higher scored phone. V reviewed the 5 and he would sooner recommend the 4A 5G. For me, I tell people to get the 5 because to me, water resistance is that important.
Yeah, yeah.
But
is it a, it's what's the price difference?
Again? $200 difference if you're not on Verizon. If you're on Verizon, it's $100 difference.
Okay.
So you
then,
still
yeah.
save some money. And also if you're paying over 24 months, $200 is like less than $10 a month. So really the difference isn't that great. I think V's issue with, you know, the 5 is more that the competition is so much better. For me, I like Google software experiences good enough to want to stick to it. But I agree that there's no like, boom, wow, you know, that sort of like headliner attention grabbing feature. So
what about buying last year's Pixel 4, which you often find on sale or refurbished or something? Because that would be a great deal. And that'd be a
no.
More powerful phone, no?
Just no, because one of the things they improved on the Pixel 5 and 4a 5G is battery life. The 4 and 4 XL were notorious for terrible battery because of the Soli, we think, the radar sensing chip. So,
and they killed that. There's no more radar sensing.
Exactly, because they're like, oops, didn't work.
Nobody cares.
No one wants this. So, yeah. But it's still, I think the other reviews from other publications were like, the Pixel 5 is really, really good. I think it's really good because it pared down and went back to the basics and it nailed the basics. you know, and the cameras are pretty good too.
I do feel like it'd be more, go ahead.
Cinematic pan. Ooh, checks out. It's like, ooh, so smooth.
Is that just panoramic, a better panoramic?
It's like, no, cinematic pan is this video stabilization mode that gives you like theater quality, like cinema quality pan footage, because it slows the video speed to like twice the frame rate. So like about half the speed, and just like packed in the frame, so it just looks so smooth. It just looks so good.
It's just shooting high speed video. That's just shooting 120 FPS or more video.
Yeah. I mean, that's, but they're calling it cinema, and but it's also working with the scene to stabilize in part as well. It's not just packing in the frames. So
that's interesting.
It's pretty. Mm. It's pretty.
Okay, so pixels this year, kind of confusing.
Yeah, very confusing. Yeah.
Choose carefully. Choose wisely, Android fans. Let's move on to our preview of the Xbox Series X with Engadget reporter Jessica Condit. Hey, Jess, how's it going?
Hey, guys, going all right. How are you?
I'm so glad we managed to get you on to talk about this. This is one of the biggest hardware news of the week as well, even in a week that's so full of hardware news. And you spent some time with it. Mm-hmm. Thanks for getting up early, also, just for our podcast listeners. Thanks for getting up early to join us.
No. All good. That's all right. No, I've had the Xbox for like 3 weeks now. So this is the Series X, and that's the big one. And I'm loving it. So, I mean, my final preview just went live today. That was the second one. I was able to talk about literally everything. It's still a preview console, so this is not like final software, you know, it's running everything it should, but like the UI isn't final and stuff like that. But the box looks exactly like the box will when it ships. Yeah.
Your video is so great. I mean, the video that you did on the, on this is, it looks so good. But sorry, what were your main takeaways, I guess, from having spent 3 weeks with this thing?
Oh, yeah. So I think the like favorite feature that I have is Quick Resume. And this is one of the features I covered in the first preview. It allows you to jump between games, like active games that are kind of running in the background of the system. And you can just jump into Control and then immediately boot up Doom Eternal and then immediately boot up Don't Starve. And you don't have to wait for each game to close out and then start all over again. You just pick right back up as if each game were just paused in the background, which is basically what's happening. That's really cool. Like that takes a lot of power. Yeah. And that's something that just like this generation of consoles can't do. Aside from that, like every game was so fast. This library that I'm playing with is basically just the backward compatible library, which I mean, there's a ton of games available on Xbox. That's kind of their selling point for this generation. They have a ton of games at starting line, you know, day one. So I've been playing a lot with Game Pass games, and these are all backward compatible. And they are so fast. The load times between deaths or between levels or fast traveling, it's 3 to 4 times faster than anything on the current gen, generally, is what I'm seeing. So like 10 seconds to load to load a new, you know, a whole new level. That's kind of unheard of for console gaming.
So yeah, Jess, this is your second preview of the Xbox Series X, which is, man, Microsoft is just really doing a good job of publicizing everything, I guess. What can you tell us about the actual next-gen games? Because I know you spend a lot of time with the older backwards compat games. Does anything look genuinely next-gen yet?
So all these games, well, not all of them, but most of the like Game Pass and backward compatible games have HDR upgrades. So they look good. They definitely like, I'm playing, so I have like Fallout New Vegas loaded up right now, which is a 360 game, I want to say. It's gotta be 360. So, I mean, it looks way better than it did. It kind of, you know, in your memory, these old games look better than they actually were. When you load them up, you're like, oh, right, there were a lot of sharp edges in this game. But when you load it up on the new console, it's like, oh, okay, that's kind of actually how I remember it. It looks nice. And it feels good. So I played a few new games that haven't technically come out yet. Dirt 5 and Yakuza Like a Dragon. Cool. So that these are both like they're coming to this gen and next gen consoles. So it's not totally built for this system necessarily, but it does take advantage, you know, of some of the higher processing power and everything. So Yakuza looks amazing. Load times in that game have never been terribly long. So comparing that wasn't like a huge thing, but it was really speedy, super, super fun to play. Looks good. And then Dirt 5 was super crisp. Like that's where I was really kind of testing latency and just trying to see if I could feel any pauses between me hitting a button on the brake and, you know, the car stalling or something. But it was so smooth and it feels exactly like the next generation should, honestly. It's a better, faster console, and that's what we want.
Yeah. I think one thing, it's just the convenience of it sounds kind of amazing too, but Jess, do you think we kind of took a step back with the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 generation where games had to be installed, you know, like it was very, it was so different from the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 era where you could just like pop in a game and just start playing. Maybe occasionally you'd have an update to do, but you could just play games off discs. To me, this feels like we're getting back to that sort of like ease of use when it was just easy to pop in new games, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I actually see, I see Microsoft, they really tried to do what they're doing now. They tried to do with the Xbox One,
yes.
Right? They tried to launch this console that had DRM built in where you have to install every game and Microsoft kind of controls how you can use them and all this stuff. But what we kind of give up in terms of DRM, we gain in being able to access a huge library of games instantly digitally. You know, we gain in not having to deal with a process of packaging a game, of paying for the plastic and the actually shipping the game discs and all that. It changes the entire market. And it actually, I think, makes it easier. It's really made it easier for developers to ship games, indie developers to ship games, all that stuff. So I see where this has, I don't know, I guess I wouldn't call it a step back, but I do see it as making sense with where our lives are. We're living online. Digital life is not a new thing. Online connectivity is reaching that plateau. You know, enough people have a good enough internet connection to be able to use services like Game Pass and like xCloud and all these other things. So no, I see it as a natural and beneficial evolution, just kind of, yeah, making games more accessible. Like you say, like there's so many games. Game Pass is such a good deal. Like
I
cannot stress that enough. Like I'm not an Xbox fangirl. It's such a good deal. Why wouldn't you do it? You know,
this is what it's going to take to get Trillin to get an actual console. Cause I think the Series S is perfect for people like Trillin who want to play games and don't want like a huge barrier to entry or want to buy $60 games all the time. Like it seems like a great deal.
I have to even say, like, when Jess, you were talking about quick resume, I was already like, wow, that already sounds better than my Switch.
It is certainly, you know, better than your Switch.
And the Game Pass library, I mean, I pay for, what is it, like Nintendo Online, just to have some of the online features on the Switch, and then I think I bought like a few games at the very start of it, so I spent a few $100 on games. And now, like, I could just take that money into Game Pass and then have this library of games. I really do think, like you guys said, is a good deal. I'm not 100% committed to getting a gaming console yet.
So you have so many Android devices, you can just subscribe to Game Pass and just use those Android devices and play games over the cloud. That is kind of where we're at right now.
You know.
You should start there.
Yeah,
we were talking about the iPhone 12 earlier to this episode, and we didn't mention that League of Legends got a shout out. Jez and I talk about how we like League of Legends, and I mean, I could play League for free on my PC. That's how I play it. But like, imagine though, like with a PC Xbox Game Pass, I think integration as well, and I'm sure there is one. Like the availability of games to me would be more, and maybe that's what sucks me in enough, so that I'm like, I need a proper controller for this.
If you subscribe to Game Pass, Sherlyn, you could play the PC Game Pass games on Windows, there are quite a few right now, and those the streaming stuff on Android.
Yeah, but you know what? I've just been playing so much Solitaire.
God damn it, Shirley.
Wow, Solitaire.
God damn it. Yeah. This is what I have to deal with every week.
It's 2020, baby.
Yeah.
Babe, I've been.
I love you.
Every time I launch the app on a new phone, the Solitaire app that I use, which is Microsoft's own,
just jump in and 12 hours go away.
Xbox account. I'm just like, what kind of gamer do you think I am? Like, I'm playing.
Wow.
The other game I started playing recently, and this isn't a game, is Duolingo. So,
hey, well, at least you're learning something.
That's fine. Yeah. That's cool. I get that.
But maybe this is a year. Maybe the Xbox Series X, that's the one that we just previewed, right? This is the high-end one. Mm-hmm. The X is the high-end one.
The big
S,
box.
Though, sounds like the one that I should be thinking of getting if I go get one, right? Or is that what you think, Jess? Because you know my style.
Yeah, so the S is actually probably, I don't know. I don't know what I would get. If I was just kind of weighing my options, like I'm telling people though, like I'm telling my younger brother and like my nephews and my niece, the Xbox Series S, it makes sense. It's $300.
Yeah.
And then it's all digital. Mm. The only concern, if you have Game Pass, it makes so much sense. Please get the Xbox Series S for that. Yes. But, the only thing is the size of the onboard storage is about 512 gigabytes, I believe. Mm. And that's not all going to be dedicated to games. Like some of that's going to be used for other stuff. So that's not a lot of storage, especially considering the size of a lot of next gen games, which is, probably around 100 gigabytes is kind of standard.
Yeah.
If you want to have apps on there too, you can't really have a lot stored on the console. But hey, Dev, you had mentioned something that I didn't actually include in the preview. So you were talking about cold storage, yeah?
Cold storage. So yeah, the problem of this new generation is storage. So the Xbox Series S and X use this new SSD that's built, it's in the console, it's super fast. Mm-hmm. There is that expandable 1 terabyte Western Digital drive, or Seagate drive, which is over $200. That's what those drives cost. Unfortunately, it seems like a lot, but that's what NVMe SSDs cost. Your other option is to plug in any old, USB portable hard drive, and you can play the older games off of those. So you could play the Xbox, 360 and Xbox One games. The Series X games can be stored on those devices. So you can offload it off your main storage. So you don't have to re-download it again. And then when you want to play it, you have to move it back over, which is, it's annoying, but I do think for a lot of people, you could get, a 4 terabyte portable drive for around $100 these days. And it's not the most stable thing in the world. And it's not fast, but it'll play those older games just fine. So I think people are going to stack up on all these things.
And that's kind of how it goes sometimes, right? Just with a new console, they sell a certain amount of storage and then they're selling the accessories. It's a very Apple move, I think.
Storage is expensive. Storage, among the things we're paying for on these consoles, it's the storage, it's the GPUs, really. And SSDs are so fast right now, but they're expensive. There's no getting around that, unfortunately.
Jess, do you think I should get an Xbox or a PS for my first adult console?
Oh, how fun. Okay, so
the Switch is an adult console. Come on.
The Switch is an adult console.
Higher end console.
Okay. Yeah. I'm using in my house, we have a PS4 and I've been using that for years. That's been our main console. And I have an Xbox One, but we just ended up on the PS4 more often. That's how it goes. So I'm switching from this PS4 to this Xbox ecosystem right now. And that's where I started my gaming life was Xbox. So it feels really nice to come home kind of
nostalgia.
It kind of does. So I haven't played with the PS5 yet. It hasn't. There's an all digital version of that one as well. I don't know. I have no idea what that's looking like. I'm sure it's going to be just fine, though, right? It's a new console. It's going to be faster, smarter, all that. But I am very much enjoying the Xbox right now. So if I had to give a recommendation, I can't say don't get an Xbox. That's all.
I'm just gonna be like, I will definitely have to wait for what games come out that lure me into that ecosystem, and then I'll make that decision. For now, the Switch is perfectly fine.
Gotcha. Any closing thoughts, Jess, on this preview so far? We're still working on the review will happen, ahead of the launch, but we're gonna be working on that down the line.
Yeah. It's an exciting time. It's a weird year, obviously, for everything, but It kind of makes me forget that there's a whole election coming and everything. These consoles are coming, we could just focus on that instead. And I think we'll be okay. But no, please focus on the election too, everyone.
Gotcha. Please focus on the election, right. Everybody. Consoles please. Are great, but you need to survive to play the games, okay?
Let's take care of that first, man. Yeah.
Jess, where can we find you on the internet, Jess?
I am on Instagram, Jess L. Condit, C-O-N-D-I-T-T, and Twitter, Jess Condit. Find me.
Thanks for joining us. Thank you so much, Jess.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
Let's move on to what we've been working on. I put up a review of the Surface Laptop Go this week. This was, we talked about it a couple weeks ago when Microsoft announced it. It is the baby boy, the tiny Surface laptop. It has a 12.4-inch screen. It's very cute. I think I enjoyed using it, but my review, it's interesting to see like how Microsoft balanced getting this thing cheap, making it kind of a budget machine because it starts at $550, mm-hmm. But also still making it feel premium. And I dive into all that in my review. I think there are some... This is not a computer for people who have used a lot of laptops. If you're a prosumer, probably not for you because the screen is super low res. It's under 1080p. It is, what else? The bottom of the case is made out of a plastic material. So it's not like all metal as all the other Surface laptops. It maxes out at 8 gigabytes of RAM, where I typically recommend people buy 16 gigabytes of RAM mm-hmm. on any new computer to really make that last for 4 years or so. So it's limited in a lot of ways, but the price in particular, the $550 model, super, like it has the same processor as all the others, but only has 64 gigabytes of storage, and it's slow eMMC storage, which is basically the stuff on flash drives. It is not like the good SSD storage. It also only has 4 gigabytes of RAM. 4 gigabytes of RAM in a Windows PC. No, not in 2020. I don't think so, Microsoft. So the one I'd recommend, and I think for most people, would be like a $700 model that has, all these have good Core i5 quad-core CPUs, but that one has 8 gigabytes of RAM, 120 gigabytes of storage. Not much storage, but I think for a kid or for anybody's first computer or for undiscerning users, like, hey, this is fine for $700. The one we reviewed was $900. That has 256 gigabytes of storage and 8 gigabytes of RAM. At that price range, you could buy last year's XPS 13, our favorite PC laptop ever, but you could buy that for around $900 and still get a 4K screen and probably in some cases get better RAM too. So I think the $900 model is kind of a toss-up. This is an interesting play for Microsoft, but man, I feel like, Sherlyn, if you started using this, you'd find it cute but really annoying pretty quickly.
My main thing is like, what's the typing experience? Because it looks so typing cramped is good. In that video.
Typing is good because they did a good job of bringing in like the deep Surface keyboard, but they had to cheap out because there's no backlight. And if you're like me and you write a lot at night and type a lot in like low light environments, that is super annoying because then you have to have a light near you to actually see the keys properly. Just even like a simple on-off backlight would be nice, but that's all added cost that they can't really afford here.
Yeah, I mean, I was hopeful that this would be like a good entry point into Surface laptops for people, just because I think the Surface laptop line is great.
But it's not just the $550
one. Not the $500, which sucks. I was excited for that price, but I guess maybe it's 4 gigs of RAM. Holy
four God. Gigs of RAM. So just like we reviewed the Surface Go 2 this year, which is the small, the smaller tablet. Surface tablet hybrid. Yeah. And I think this is a little more impressive because the Surface Go 2 starts at $400, but also the specs there are super low and you really wouldn't want to use a computer like that. To make the Surface Go 2 usable, you'd have to spend for like the $650 model, which even then, you have a small screen, you have a really, really slow processor because those are running Intel Y series chips. So anyway, I have complicated feelings about all of these. It's nice to see Microsoft making cheaper, smaller devices, but I don't think we're quite there yet. But hey, it's cute. It's cute. And if you're looking for a computer for your kids and they don't need to do much, Surface Laptop Go is fine. It plays Minecraft. It plays the basic game. So hey, that's fine.
Probably not League of Legends that I play.
I mean, probably. League is, I don't know. You don't need much for League. But
you don't need much, but not, I might be maybe reaching a finally heading towards a lull in work. But I still have to, Google is having an event later this afternoon. I still have to, there's some other things going on that I still can't talk about. Everybody knows that I have a lot of secrets. And, you know, laptop companies, next week there's two laptop companies that have their events. So, you know, we're going to be getting ready for PC news. Except I am penciled in for time off next week, so I won't be around. So good luck, Devendra, with handling some of that.
We'll see how this goes.
But yeah, I also this week covered news of the new Nest thermostat. On Monday it was announced, and I like the look of the new one because it's like $130. It's very tiny. Mm-hmm. It's a touch-based design, so it gets rid of that like hallmark, you know, spinning frame.
That was good.
I know.
A spinning frame mechanical devices. Let us not lose this. But yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Samsung Galaxy Watch of thermostats, you know what I mean? But so it's not that you can't, like, it completely does away with that spinning frame. The Nest thermostat with that feature is still available for sale, but the new Nest thermostat, the $130 one, is just smaller, it's more elegant looking. I think it's super pretty, and I really want one, except for I rent an apartment, so we'll see. But check out that news. That's some of the stuff I've been working on as well, and fingers crossed you won't hear from me next week if I get to take my break.
Okay, well, I hope you get to take your break, Shalyn. Let's move on to our pop culture picks. You have some secrets that you'd like to share, but
always.
Also I want to know what you plan to be doing next week to veg and watch too.
So, finally, I've been putting off watching Haunting of Bly Manor that I've been dying to watch. As listeners of this podcast know, I've been waiting for a whole year to watch Haunting of Bly Manor. So hopefully next week I'll be able to do that and a lot of other stuff. And it'll be good because the last few days, I think, because I've been so drowned in the Pixel review that I actually haven't had time to watch all that much. I've been watching Evil, like you recommended, Devendra. It's good. I finished the first season. Was so annoyed by some of the characters, but anyway. And because those who have heard the earlier last week's episode will know I committed to providing like horror themed recommendations all through October. I really made it difficult for myself by doing that because like everything I've watched since has been like either already recommended in our show or like upbeat. So like not horror themed. So I had to dig deep into my troves. And I started looking for like book recommendations. I was like, maybe there's a good horror book I can recommend you guys. I saw on the Kindle store, this category, comics, manga. And I realized that, oh, crap. I have not told y'all about my favorite horror anime series. Mm-hmm. So this week, my recommendation, if you can find it, is this little show called Jigoku Shoujo. Translated, it means Hell Girl. Mm-hmm. And it's basically this girl who like...
Is this a biopic, Sherlyn? Of yourself.
I wish. So cool. She just like, basically the premise is like, you know, it's somewhat Death Note-like where people can go to this website and they enter the name of their enemy or someone who has done them wrong. And this girl called Emma Ai, she, you know, serves revenge. She drags them to hell.
Pretty
cool. It's really cool. I really like it. There's a backstory going with her character, but I mean, I watched this when I was a lot younger. I haven't seen it again since. It's supposedly on Prime Video, but I haven't been able to like sort of rewatch it. The other series I want to recommend that's also horror theme anime is Pet Shop of Horrors. I believe this one's Clamp. And it's basically about this, you know, woman who runs a pet shop, very exotic pet shop, but they sell like there's little like strange things happening to the people who buy pets from this store. Often these people have a certain vice. For some people it's like domestic abuse, for some people it's gambling, and the pet like kind of tortures it out of them, more or less.
This looks like a 90s anime.
It is 90s, like, it's very 90s.
Yeah, just looking at the animations, like I'm such a weeb. I can tell like what genre or what era this is from.
I remember the name.
I never ended up seeing this.
It's so good. I really enjoyed it, but it's so hard to find. I'm sure if you know of a good anime streaming service, like I don't know, Crunchyroll or something, you might be able to find both of these. But if you've been looking for a good like animated horror series, I love these two. These are my recommendations.
Those are super cool. Yeah. Well, actually, in that vein, since you were talking about horror anime and other stuff, so sorry, video team, because I didn't put this down, but my one recommendation to you is anything by Junji Ito, including, you know, the great Uzumaki, which is a horror manga just about spirals. spirals, infesting and infecting a town in Japan, and it drives people insane. And Junji Ito, just his imagery is some of the most horrific stuff. You probably wouldn't even want to put it up on video because it will freak people out.
Wow.
So I would not recommend that.
So this is a manga or an anime?
It is a manga. There is an anime. The animes have been bad, so do not watch the animes.
Okay, so I'll find the book. Okay.
Find the books. Read the books. They're really good. Yeah. So there's that. I have been watching The Haunting of Bly Manor, which Sherlyn, disappointingly, still has not seen.
I have had no time.
Wow. So... Sherlyn, for some reason, wrote a 4,000-word review of the Pixel 4a 5G, and I'm like, I don't 4, know.
4,100 words.
What? You didn't need to do that, Shirley. You don't need to go that hard.
There's
it's
so
Pixel
many
4a 5G.
No, I find, well, our regular editor, Terrence, who slashes the crap out of my reviews, wow. Is on vacation this week, so I was like, I can go ham. So I went ham.
Sherlyn's like, I'm just going to hurt myself more with reviews. Haunting of Bly Manor. It is very good. It is not like The Haunting of Hill House, which was the last Netflix series Mike Flanagan did. This is more of like a gothic horror, gothic romance type thing because it is, there aren't really many jump scares. There's a great creep factor and there are ghosts and there are things haunting this, you know, English manor. But it is like, it's more about character building. It's more about, you know, exploring these people, each of whom have issues and baggage and, you know, weight that they're bringing to this world. And the ghosts are really the things that haunt them. So, you know, the regrets they have in life, the people they feel have been, the people they feel they've let down, things like that. It is great, romantic in a way that I don't think anybody really expected. And it's just like, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful watch during October. It is not a super scare fest, but there is some imagery that will certainly freak you out. So I'm saying if you liked Haunting of Hill House, definitely watch this. But really, hey folks, I've talked about Mike Flanagan before, but go watch anything he's done. Dr. Sleep, which came out last year,
that was
the
good
sequel to The Shining that nobody really wanted, is fantastic. And if you have HBO Max, it's on there now. Click into the special features, watch the director's cut of that movie, because it is half an hour longer and it is so good. So I love Mike Flanagan. I love everything he's doing for horror. That is what you can watch for October, and be sure to check out Haunting of Bly Manor.
That's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at /filmcast at /film.com. Check out our latest reviews, and we're also launching a Patreon soon, so hey, go take a look at that.
If you want to send me the names of your favorite hot anime men or cute anime characters and animals, you can find me on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, please, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
All these names, I'm like, who? What? Okay. Sports? Sports. Okay. Yeah.